irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening here in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California. This is LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, your host for the show, and of course, sitting across the studio from me again tonight is the charming and effervescent, lovely, witty, give me some more. Come on, come on. Feed me, Bobby. Feed me.
Oh, happy to be here, and it's dark now.
Bobby Jean Bell. Yes,
it's
it is dark. You can't
now.
Even see the high school.
No,
now.
we have sunset and beyond.
We have absolutely
here in
no
Sherman Oaks.
View now.
No, just some traffic lights.
Just
and,
traffic.
Yep.
So you got an award two awards last week.
We did. It was a really amazing evening. My husband Jim and I were honored by the City of Santa Clarita's Art Commission for our years of providing cultural programming in Old Town New Hall, and we were also recognized by our city council for the same, and it was an amazing outpouring of testimonials written in, and folks that came that stood up and spoke, and then each Arts Commissioner spoke to us, and Lorene West, our pro tem mayor here in the valley, also spoke very heartfelt and gave us a certificate on behalf of the city council. So we weren't with you last week.
No, you weren't.
Seems like things happen on Thursday nights.
Well, I wanted to send a special thank you to Henry Park for sitting in your chair last week. He was a little overwhelmed, I think, but he enjoyed the book, and you know, he asked the appropriate questions. So
and it was a great book, and it was a great interview.
It was a great interview. And it was a fun night, and I have to tell you that that woman can write a
story. Oh, my goodness. Yes, and we thank her for sending us some more that are in the series, because we both want to read them.
And we got a nice message from her on our Facebook page, which she had a picture of her mug.
Oh, did that? Okay.
Yes, and it was Katie Salidas, and she's just the nicest lady. She really, truly is, and she's, and what a storyteller, I have to tell you. But tonight's guest is also
Well,
let's get through some selling of product, and we'll get right to her, because I can hardly wait to start talking to her on the air. Okay, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and by Tuscany Bay Books, the company that will help the new writer format and edit, proofread, and get your books on the shelf. If you don't know what you're doing, or you're really lost in the shuffle and the hassle of getting a book produced or printed or published, give us a call. The number you can reach us at is 805-795-3165. And, of course, we have done some very, very, very great novels, mine being the best so far. Well, of course, which would be Jonah Blue, and the sales have been wonderful on Jonah Blue. And I thank you again to all that have bought Jonah Blue, and also to the people I've given Jonah Blue to, because they've always liked it as well. We also have the Jack Del Rio series from Richard Polinelli is coming back out. The final book in the Del Rio series, of course, Reservations was one. Escaping Infinity was also one of Richard's books, also a Tuscany Bay book. And so that number again is 805-795-3165. We're there to help you, the new writer and the author. And if you do need help, give us a call. Also brought to you by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. If you want to contact them, you can go to their email address, which is that's their website, SCV, as in Santa Clarita Valley, scvoutwest.com, or you can call their toll-free number at 877-340-9378. And if you are interested in their very last of the concert series this year, which is Almeda Bradshaw, one of my favorites. That number for direct call is 661-347-9700. And do we have any seats left, Bobby?
Yes, there are still seats available, and this will be the last one for this year, and the last one we'll be hosting.
Yes.
So you want to come on out and welcome from Montana, Almeda Bradshaw.
There you go. And of course, I have two seats.
Yes, you do.
I do. Hoorah. I'm looking forward to this show. I truly am. Okay, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload. That is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski or any of the fine Target TFM staff. Tell them you heard it here on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way the most expedient way possible is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry, bar none. So call at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today, and no kidding, it's going to be the best call you make if you have to move some freight. Okay, if you want to call and talk to our author tonight, which you may want to do, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, we're going to bring her on here in just a second. The short bio, this is one we ask our writers to write for themselves. So, this is what our writer wrote about herself. Paris Afton Bonds is the mother of five sons and the author of 40 published novels. She is the co-founder and first vice president of Romance Writers of America, as well as the co-founder of Southwest Writers Workshop, all of which nudged her closer to being committed to bedlam, which she has managed to avoid so far by a pretense at sanity, and I'm sure a little wine goes along with that pretense. Declared by ABC's Nightline as one of the three best-selling authors of romantic fiction, the award-winning Paris Afton Bonds has been interviewed by such luminaries as Charlie Rose and featured in major newspapers and magazines, as well as published in more than a dozen languages. And New York Times best-selling author, she donates her time to teaching creative writing in both grade school children and female inmates, both of which are captive audiences. Yeah, I guess so. The Paris Award was established in her name by the Southwest Writers Workshop to honor a published writer who has given outstandingly of time and talent to other writers. Prestigious recipients of the Paris Award include Tony Hillerman and the Pulitzer nominee Norman Zellinger. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block Perrin Afton Bonds. Paris, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. And obviously, I write fiction.
Well,
that resume you just read.
You know, we do that because...
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it's such an honor to have you here. You know, we ask you to write your own bio because if you tell a lie, then your friends will know it.
Yes, and I lied a lot.
Well, you're a writer. You have to. That's part of the
fiction,
deal.
Fiction.
Yeah.
And you have five boys. Holy crap. I have two. I had to think about that for just a second. I have two.
How many do you have?
Two.
two
of my own.
What are the ages of your... Yeah, what are the ages of your boys? Do you mind sharing?
Oh, my gosh. Bobby, the oldest... I confess, the oldest will turn 50 in December, and the youngest is... I think 37, I think.
37. Wow.
But I have 10 grandchildren and then one great-grandchild, so it's hard to keep up with, you know. And
yeah.
So I apologize if I get the ages wrong.
Well,
okay.
That's okay. I can't ever remember mine either.
Yeah,
so.
That's okay. Wow. So you've written 40 books, and so obviously you were writing when the kids were younger. Were you trying to raise five kids at the same time that you were writing so many books?
Well, actually, I've written, Bobby, 45 novels.
45, yeah.
I've had 40 published. I have five that are in a series called The Texicans. And, Jim, it's sort of Westerns, so I guess you and your Del Rio series can appreciate
that. Well, that's
that.
Not mine. That's so Richard, that's Richard's, but yeah.
Oh.
Jack Del Rio actually is a modern private investigator.
Yeah.
But, my Westerns are The Hunter and Striker and...
Yeah, so that's a series that you will that be coming out?
Well, that they are in a submission negotiations right now, so I've got my fingers crossed. But so 40 have been published, but yes, I started writing, and actually I would I was nursing and typing with one hand while I wrote, and washing out diapers. Bobby, this is before we had, you know, disposable diapers.
Sure.
So, yes, I've come a long way since then.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty amazing, actually. Tell us a little bit, just share a little bit more about your background, if you would.
Well, I think the amazing thing is I'd been writing short stories and articles. We lived in Mexico, actually, Mexico City, and we moved back to the States. I figured no one would know, if I failed. So I sent off a book, and 6 months later, I got this call I was ironing, and I thought it was from it was a female, and I thought she was trying to sell me a book subscription. Back then, you had, like Doubleday Book of the Month.
Oh, sure.
I almost hung up on her, Bobby. Huh? And at the last minute, I realized she wanted to buy my books.
Oh,
and I started crying, and she kept reassuring me through my blubbering, yes, we think your book is wonderful, and it was a major publishing house, and I was just a nobody from Podunk, Texas. And after I hung up crying from her, I turned around and started crying again because my husband's best shirt was set afire by the iron the flames. But from that moment on, then I became, I guess, well, actually, I was a published writer before that, if you count selling to articles and short stories. Mm-hmm. But it's been in April, it's been 45 years this past April that I've been a professional writer.
Wow. Congratulations.
Five sons. Where did you find the time?
Well, she's a romance writer.
Jim, that was it.
Well, romance writer, I understand how she made the five sons. But how did you find the time?
We'll go into that.
To take care of them and write at the same time.
I did my best at research.
Well, okay,
yeah,
then.
Yeah. Well, the two books that we read, I read both.
You read both.
I read both. Call of the Clan and At First Sight. And there's so much historical backstory that fills, that fills the plots of both of these books. You obviously do a lot of research. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, thank you. And I think one of the books you read was a novella, Bobby.
Yes.
But I do a lot of research. And, our contemporary novels, they reflect our dilemmas and our issues and our customs and our traditions and our angst. But it's the historicals that allow us to escape the everyday world into an alternate reality. And so it's that research that lends the authenticity. And it's the people's involvement in that the personalities and temperaments that make us come alive, the romance. And Bobby and Jim, I don't care if it's horror stories or mysteries or sci-fi. Romance is practically in every story, so that's a given.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the two books that we read, The Call of the Clan, book two of The Clan, is set in North Carolina in 1776, and it was so interesting that you bring in the Royalists, and the Highlanders and the Royalists that are loyal to King George. Most of us think about 1776, and of course we're thinking about
Revolutionary War,
and we're thinking of the Tories and such, but right. You bring in a whole nother element that I really don't remember
right.
from learning when I was in school.
Right.
And that to me was so very interesting. And you do the same thing with the book At First Sight. I didn't know Oliver Cromwell had outlawed Christmas, for instance.
Yeah, you know? Isn't that surprising?
You know?
Yeah.
And even though this takes place again here, you know, on the in the colonies, it starts in 1649. She's escaping. Our main character is escaping England, so we're getting a lot of what was going on in England at that time. And I just found that fascinating, just fascinating.
Well, what I wanted also to introduce Bobby and Jim was not only, you know, the loyalists and the Tories here in the pre-revolution era, but the need for our right to fight for our own independent way of thinking, and even today, you know, with our political issues, the right to go our own way, and that's what I wanted to express in those two earlier novels.
Mm-hmm. Now, your main character in Call of the Clan, one of the main characters is Jacob Dare, and
yes.
This is the book we're in North Carolina, and of course, I have family that lived in Dare County for a long, long, long time. They just moved from Kitty Hawk, actually, not very long ago. So, of course, in my mind, as I'm reading, I'm going, Dare County. Oh, my gosh. Is this Jacob Dare connected somewhere?
Dare.
Virginia Dare.
Virginia Dare, the first woman born.
Yes, Virginia Dare.
In the United States.
Yes. So
yeah.
I wondered how you came up with the name for Jacob. Tell us, he's quite a guy.
He is quite a guy.
Isn't he?
He's my hero.
He's your hero, right, Jim?
He's my new hero.
Tell us about Jacob Dare.
So, Jim, you mentioned that in your, and I'm so grateful for your 5-star review on Amazon for my book, uh-huh. The Calling of the Clan. But what can I say? My heart throbs for Daniel Day-Lewis and The Last of the Mohicans for Hawkeye.
Right.
So Jacob Dare, of course, was modeled after Hawkeye. And his independence, his willingness to go his own way, regardless of the conflicts going on between governments.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my gosh, my heart, I need to take my pills, Bobby, my heart pills.
Oh yeah, every time he came on a page, you know, I was riveted. I couldn't drink the cup of coffee or anything. I had to just keep my, you know, keep my eyes reading. Now, Jim, as a male,
yes.
Reading a romance.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about how that, you know, how were you as a reader reading this book?
Not quickly.
Please be nice.
Oh, Paris, he just read a 5-star review, so.
Paris, I've already been nice to you. Now I'm going to be even nicer. I'm going to be even nicer to you. I told Paris in my review and in our conversation the other night on Tuesday evening that although I am not enamored of the romance genre. As you well know, Bobby, I mean, we've had some good romance writers in mm-hmm. here, and I've always said the same thing. I'm not enamored of the genre because it's just not something that I would choose to read. But I am enamored, and I do like a lot good reading and
mm-hmm.
good writing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Exceptional storytelling, both of which Paris Afton Bonds has.
Right.
She is a storyteller extraordinaire, and that's what kept me...
She's a little like a magician.
Kinda is. And, you know, she really, I mean, she gets so descriptive in her characters mm-hmm. that you know, I mean, I could describe right now Jacob to you down to probably the tassels on his moccasins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having been a historian and studied that period of time, there were a lot of frontiersmen that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
They were extremely stoic. They did what they had to do without question.
Mm-hmm.
They stepped in and they did it. There was never having to talk them into anything.
Right.
And it's exactly what Jacob Dare is. Of course, he had an ulterior motive. And if you read the book, I'm not going to give it away, Paris. If you read the book, you'll understand what it is. But still, at the end, it still kind of works out okay.
Well, and that's part of, you know, Paris, preparing for tonight, I spent some time on the romance writer's website. Romance Writers of America,
yes.
Of America, What a phenomenal website. Oh, my gosh. You could spend hours on that website. What was interesting to me is only 16% or so of readers are male. You have a lot of really interesting statistics and also things about the romance category and the subcategories or the subgenres that exist within romance. Are there very many romance writers that are male?
Oh, that's a very good question.
I think there are very few. I went online and looked, and honestly, I cannot remember. But tell me, and Bobby, you said you researched. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking it's less than 5%. But tell me if I could be wrong about that.
Well, I don't remember that I saw.
I haven't been online in a long time.
Yeah, it's 16% of the readers are male. It was just, I don't want to be
writers, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that I saw that, but it's a $1.08 billion business.
Oh, I know, it's huge.
And that number is from 2013. And it has just a tremendous readership. And what made me think of this, Jim, was you just said about an optimistic, ending. Part of what has to happen within a romance story, if I understand this right, Paris, is love is obviously a central part to the plot and all, but it also has to end up. It has to end upbeat.
I'm not too sure this novel ends that upbeat, though.
Well,
I think it ends at an impasse.
And we want to know more.
Exactly.
And we want it. We have a sense. Well, we don't want to. We don't want to say.
No.
But that was interesting to me that within this genre, there's I don't want to say formula writing, but that it should that it should end on a positive note. Is that correct? Is that what I understand?
What it is, Bobby and Jim, is not that it is one of the, they call it the HEA, Happy Ever After. No. Every novel, it should be that particular circumstances are end resolved and happily. So in The Calling of the Clan, yes, it ends happily, that situation, and then they move on. But in every novel, you do have, I would say, romance in some way or love involved, or horror or whatever.
Yep.
And romance is the number one best-selling genre, followed by your criminal mystery, Grisham.
Right.
Your religious inspirational is three, like the Bible. The fourth is, I looked this up, sci-fi and fantasy, like Game of Thrones, whom I just spent this past weekend with George R.R. Martin, who is the author of Game of Thrones.
Oh, wow.
And then fifth is the horror, like Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
Romance is here to stay forever and ever.
Right.
Amen to that, sister.
Well, I have to tell you, Paris, that going through your book, and as I was reading, there was a few moments that were hubba hubba.
Oh, yeah. And
you should have taken your heart pills or had a margarita, one of the two.
You're such a wonderful descriptions. This same book we're talking about, the leading lady, Kat, you describe her hair so many times and so different every time, and how Jacob sees and how others see, and how and I think, how can she come up with, she's just shared a whole nother description of this amazing, red flaxen, and how the sun, and I think, how do you keep coming up with new ways to describe, and so poetically, that to me is astounding, and it keeps me wanting to, read, because I don't say, she's already described this and she's describing it again.
Right.
It's like coming new.
Well, she always looks different.
Well, yeah.
and Paris, I have to ask you this, because I struggled a wee bit at the front of this book with this very problem. You use a lot of the old Scottish Gaelic, and it's actually her name is actually pronounced Katrina.
Katrina.
Yes, is that correct?
Uh huh.
Okay, even though it is spelled Katrina, it is her name is
exactly.
Katrina. You use a lot of Gaelic terms that the Scottish use, and old Gaelic, not now, but the old Gaelic. And as you go along, you hear, you see, you read all these terms, and you go, "What the hell does that mean?" And you can't find it written anywhere.
I know. It's not in a footnote.
But like with any written language, eventually you see the word enough, and you see its use, and you finally figure out what that word is or that phrase, and you move on. But I found it fascinating that you never wavered from the use of that language at all. Mm-hmm. You used it all the way through this story.
It's very tricky because dialect creates identity, Jim and Bobby, whether it's geographical or, you know, social or ethnicity,
right,
or gender. And so you're walking a tightrope there between authenticity, and yet you risk losing the reader. And it is hard to do. And, you know, sometimes I succeed and sometimes I fail. But regardless of whether I succeed or fail, I'm doing what my passion calls me to do. And that's all I can do.
Uh-huh.
And how lucky I am. I'm following my passion. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting paid for it.
Okay, so do you have an old Gaelic dictionary sitting on your desk that you can pop to?
You know, in the old days, I would go to the library, and because I was poor, 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 and bring home books.
Uh-huh.
And now, thanks to the internet, you know, you can just resort to looking it up.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dialects are tough, and I actually wrote a dialect for one of my characters in one of my books. His name is Kieran O'Connor, and he's from County Cork in Ireland.
Yeah,
and
I was just there last October.
His brogue is quite heavy, and he uses expletives quite heavily. As a lot of Irish do.
Well, Jim, what did you do then? How did you balance that tight wire?
What I did was I phonetically spelled everything out, so when you read it, the way it should have been pronounced.
Okay. And did you worry about losing the reader,
no,
distracting them from,
no, because
the story?
I counted on the character being really good enough to hold the reader's interest, mm-hmm, and it turned out that he was.
Mm-hmm. Now,
okay, yes,
you and there are Native American characters in both books also, and I think you have some Native American ancestry. Is that right?
Supposedly, Bobby, both of my great grandmothers were full-blooded Cherokee, and they had to, of course, change their name during that time from their Native American given names to, they anglicized them to, I think there were Susan and Elizabeth, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot prove anything to get all that money and go to the Cherokee casinos. Rats.
Well, you can if you get your DNA done.
Yeah, you can get your DNA done, yeah.
You know, I need to do that.
You might have a whole bunch of money sitting in Washington that you don't know you've got.
But I know... I
could be rich by now.
You could.
Some of your other titles, you have some very interesting other titles I know that I'll enjoy reading, about the Hopi and such. So you obviously have a great passion for Native American culture and bringing that to life as well, yes?
Yes, I do. And not just only the Native American culture, but also even the black culture and the Buffalo Soldiers. I did a story called For All Time set in Del Rio. Here we go with the Del Rio series. But about the their fight for their recognition as through the government as being military soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's the underdog that I think captures my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The Buffalo
Does
Soldiers.
Does that make sense?
One of my very favorite topics, the
yes,
Buffalo Soldiers.
Yes, I wish you could have seen Jim's face while you were just chatting. We need to figure out how to get this show live on Facebook or Skype or something, because as soon as you started talking about Buffalo Soldiers, Jim's eyes were just on fire.
And Del Rio, Texas. I also know about Del Rio, Texas.
Sure, of course you do.
Sure, it's right on the board. It's right on the Rio Grande.
Tell me about it, Jim. What do you know about Del Rio? Because I have spent a lot of years in Del Rio. What do you know about Del Rio?
Well, Del Rio in the 1860s, 1870s was a little town on the Rio Grande that it also was a confluence.
Clarksville.
Right. Of one of the small rivers That it was a confluence of the Rio Grande and another small river. It held a detachment
Diablo or the Devil's River.
Yes. And it held a detachment of Texas Rangers from 1870 to 1876, I believe. And they finally left. They were there for the Comancheros and the Mexican and American bandits coming across the river.
Oh, my gosh. You know your history.
I try.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Never been there.
Well, Jim, we'll have to drink to that sometime.
Well, you know what? We can probably do that. I'm not going to argue with you.
Paris,
and Bobby, I've got to ask you. I want to ask you. Do you? I know you do interviews here, but and I confess, I apologize. And I know you're involved. I think involved in music, but do you write as well?
No, not ever. You know what I say, Paris? Well, we have a website, and I write a lot of descriptions and things, but I am not a writer. What my husband, the other Jim here in the room, and I say is, we don't dance, we don't yodel, we don't sing, we don't play an instrument, we don't write poetry, we're not designers, we don't make jewelry, but we have a passion for providing platforms for all of you that do. And that's
the truth.
Thank you,
and that's what we do.
That is the honest to God truth as well. They're great hosts.
Thank you so much for this.
Oh, it's such a joy.
Well, you know, today with the introduction of the digital books, it's such a wonderful platform for writers who would go unnoticed, great writing that would go unnoticed by major publishing houses. Mm-hmm. So the indie publishing I'm so grateful for, because I guess a hybrid of both.
It can be.
Well, we were thinking today in the car on our way here, I said to my husband, I said, you know, it probably is time that I put pen to paper, and we're still thinking that we need to put a book together that is an overview of all of these fabulous interviews.
Right.
There is such great content in these interviews that it'd be really fun to, you know, put that in book form. So if I were to decide to try to write something, that's what it would be.
Which would be an outstanding book.
Is there a
book.
Common thread that you would find throughout all these interviews
I think that's one of the things we'd have to sort of think about, how to make it of interest, and whether chapters would be based on the answers that we received from a lot of people on a particular question, or whether, you know, we would think of it thematically.
Right.
Or in some cases, I think some interviews have been so phenomenal where I'd almost want to have it be a transcript without some of the banter that goes on. Just get to the heart of the matter. Because some have just been pearls of wisdom, that everything the author said was noteworthy. You know, where I would, if I were a writer, I would want to read that whole interview and take all of it, you know. So I don't know how, I'm not sure how we would figure out how to distill it. But
yeah.
I do think that we do need to do that. And Jim has a publishing house that I know would, you know, would work with me on that manuscript.
Happy to do it for her. You know, it's funny.
I think you have truly a bestseller there when you just said that if you could take the pearls of wisdom from each of the interviews. Oh my gosh, what a great book! All of us out there would want to.
We have had some writers in here, Paris, that actually have held us enthralled for 50 minutes.
And you're one of them.
And you were one of them, but also we will include Craig Johnson from Longmire in that.
And he just needs to be in entirety, because everything that he shared was like, wait, I need to make a note of that.
Right.
What was that he just said? I need to make a note of that.
We've had some.
If you were to say one, just take one pearl of wisdom that he said, what would it be?
Oh my gosh!
That he said.
Everything he said was a pearl.
But not the most important, maybe. But just the first that pops to your head.
Oh, golly. I don't know. I listened with such rapt attention.
The last interview that we had, and I wasn't on that show, but the podcast is phenomenal. And and he got into some topics that we didn't really get into a whole lot the first time we had him on, and it had to do with the creation of the Longmire TV series.
Right. Oh, yes.
And yeah. He talked at a little greater length about how they auditioned. He was allowed to see the audition tapes of the actors that had been auditioning for the roles, and he was so grateful that he actually got to participate in so much of the of what was happening. You know, he was really involved. But one of the things that he shared was he had some concerns in a couple of cases that the actors, you know, didn't quite look what he was imagining, that, you know, were a little younger than what he kind of thought and such. And to me, this was so interesting, being an outsider to this world, and what they answered back to him was, but Craig, we want to see this be a 6 to 10 year series. And if we start with the actor as old, you know, as old, where are we going to go from there? So we need to cast somebody younger who can absolutely captivate that character that you've written, who is the character, even if he's just isn't as paunchy, right, or, you know, whatever the, I'm going to be misquoting now. And that was what Craig was like, oh. And so some of it was his learning that process of moving it. And of course, the series is not the books. The series is its own stories.
Right.
If you're a Longmire fan and you've never read the books, go read the books.
Oh, they're fabulous.
You know, they're not the series.
Right.
But the characters are right on.
Yeah,
the
they
series
are.
Is just, they're just right on. But his talking about, you know, his first interview, he got the call like you were sharing.
Right.
And he went to New York and he met with someone, and the woman said to him, well, we see a series here. And he said, no, I don't think so. Yeah. I just got this one story. And she was like, okay, you go back to your ranch, you know, and okay, we don't know what we're doing. You go back to your ranch. And he was like, no, if you see a series, okay, I'm going to write a series.
And the nugget you brought away from that was, if your publisher says they see a series, say yes.
Go say yes, you know, because they probably do know more than you know. But he's just...
Well, I was going to say, you know, Bobby, that Jim, that the same thing about a character in a TV series or a movie applies even to a cover of a book. As I've gone through all these years, I've learned to try and refrain from putting the actual face of a cover on a book. Mm-hmm. My older covers do, because in your imagination, you put the people you want there as your hero or heroine.
Right.
So I try to, I'll have their back or maybe even a quarter view or something, or no character at all.
Right.
These days.
That's really smart, and I don't think anybody's mentioned that before. And
well, that way your imagination will take you the rest of the way.
And your descriptions of your characters are so vivid that you help us see that, you know, you help us picture that person.
Right.
So we don't need need the picture on the cover, you know.
And also, just a tidbit to writers who are just beginning, it will really help once you've introduced your main character, unless you have several, you know, four or five characters in a scene. I refrain from using the main character's name. I always try to say either she or he, because your reader is now in that character's head, and if you say that name again, they go, oh wait, that's not me.
Right.
So that's just sort of
that's great
to help there.
That's great.
Right.
Now you teach, since you just gave us that nugget, you teach, you work with students, and you also work with inmates.
Yes, I haven't in a while. I haven't had any captive inmates or captive students, but yes, I do. I've been busy lately.
What is what called you to do that?
I started out with captive students because my children were young, and, you know, of course, teachers would say, would you come and talk to the class? And I dreaded it, and to confess, like tonight, I dreaded I always dreaded speaking because I don't enjoy speaking before the public. But I went, and I just found out it was amazing that these kids, these children, had so much. Their imagination far exceeded adults because they roamed freer, and I so enjoyed working with them. And that evolved eventually. Just someone had asked if I would work with the Dallas County female inmates, and their stories were just incredible. I mean, I feel so blessed by this.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you a question, and this is the question we ask all of the writers, because the name of this program is The Writer's Block, and we'd like to know if our writers have ever had writer's block
or believe in it,
or even believe in it, because
don't.
Some don't.
Yeah, or don't believe in it.
It's your floor.
Okay.
Take it away.
Let me take another margarita here and take it down. I'm kidding. I've got hot chocolate in front of me. No. You're stymied, but I really believe that you have to sit yourself in the chair. And, of course, I will get up and walk around a while or run or whatever I need to do, and that's when you're incubating. A problem. I mean, if I have a problem, I'll get up and do that. But you have to trust above everything else that I could give as advice. Trust in the writing process. The answer is there. You, like our creator, whatever you want to call it or he or she, we are creators. And so we have that answer. And just trust in the process and write it wrong. I really recommend writing the wrong thing first, and mm-hmm. then you can always go back and write. But what if you don't write anything? You have nothing to correct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So sit and write it. Right. How do you feel about that, Jim?
I don't often get blocked or get stymied. I do occasionally.
Yeah.
But somebody has mentioned it to me once. That's not writer's block. It's writer's pause.
Yeah, writer's pause.
That's one of our writers said. That's not a block. It's a pause.
It's a pause.
Oh, okay, that works.
Okay,
writer's
yeah.
pause works.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And I'm like you.
And I'm pausing and I'm letting it incubate.
I'll get up, go get some coffee, or go get a bottle of water,
yeah.
or you know, just kind of like give my brain a rest before I go back. And I haven't been writing anything in about 4 months. Because we're so busy doing other stuff.
How are you surviving?
Well, I am currently writing a co-novel with my partner, and he has yet to give me back the document so I can continue working on it. He is still working on his portion, so I will get it back when
okay.
I get it back. But
okay.
Do you like writing dialogue? Do you like dialogue?
I guess that's an ambiguous answer. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I'm lost sometimes, and I don't know what the character would respond.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to get up and go get that cup of coffee or mm-hmm. hot chocolate.
Right.
And think about it.
Right.
It's hard. I mean, it doesn't always come easily
because
it requires going deep within Jim and Bobby, and sometimes I don't want to touch on something that may be difficult
right.
for me.
I have found that writing dialogue sometimes is difficult only because you haven't established the character that's speaking. You haven't established him well enough yet, so you know how he speaks and how he acts and reacts. Once you get
exactly.
that, I think that it becomes, and dialogue, of course, people run over each other with sentences and talking, and people interrupt people, and so you have to put that in the dialogue as well,
mm-hmm.
or you kind of lose the substance of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Also, though, you have to, sometimes I find I have to write the wrong dialogue because I don't have that answer at the moment, and I go ahead and put in
something
the wrong dialogue,
right?
you know, the second or third or fourth or fifth draft, I realized, no, wait, this is so much better.
And you go back and fix it, yeah.
If you keep waiting, if you stop there and just keep waiting, it could be months.
Sure.
And sometimes you're on a contract and you can't wait months for the right dialogue
sure.
to magically appear.
Sure.
Your dialogue is also rich with action. We hear the words being spoken, but you also describe their continence, how they take a pause, how the partner in the conversation is watching the face. You know, you give us, it's like watching a movie almost, in that it's not as spare as dialogue is in a play. It's really, you're giving us, like, we're in the room and we're listening and watching. The dialogue is all laden with emotion and action.
Right.
You know, whether the one
Bobby,
is twisting
you.
Her fingers, you know, while she's listening, or twisting that, you know, horsehair ring while they're it's just packed with
right.
stuff besides
right.
the words, you
right.
know.
Well, thank you, Bobby. It's when you said, like in a movie, it really, if you're a writer, you want to move in, like a close-up on a frame, move
mm-hmm,
in,
mm-hmm.
and then move out and show the larger picture,
mm-hmm.
and move back in. So you're constantly moving in with her fingers, maybe fingering the strings of her waist cincher,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, move out with, you know, the larger picture. So that's what's going on
yep,
there.
Yeah, and you give us some sense of how the words are being delivered, if the voice is soft, if the voice is staccato, if it's hardly audible and you have to get in closer to hear it. You know, you give us just a richness that goes along with the words of the dialogue that I also find very compelling, because that's how you get to know the characters, you know.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. You make me feel good.
I told you, you're not going to have a hard time with this interview at all.
I'll be so glad. Thank you. But, you know, and of course, you know, it's you try to involve all five senses when you're
mm-hmm.
writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I try that. But sometimes those don't come along to the fourth or fifth draft. Usually the first draft is more skeletal
right.
figures and just a plot going
right.
along. And
right.
then I flesh them out on the second and third and fourth draft. And by the fifth, it's sort of like they're too fat and I need to, you know, hone them down and get rid of the excess.
Wow, that was a pearl you just shared.
There it is. Well, you know what, Paris? You've had so much fun.
Yes.
It's time for
Yay!
You to give us
it.
Your email and your website
yeah,
address and
people
where
can,
people can get a
yeah.
hold of you and buy your books.
Yeah, what's all that info?
I need to do that?
Yeah,
you need to do that.
Sure.
Oh, man. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. All right, all right, all right. Paris at ParisHeftonBonds.com.
Two R's in Paris.
Two R's in Paris, right.
Oh, wait. Please buy The Calling of the Clan, because I have five starving sons and they have malnutrition and we're poor. So please buy the book, and that's all I have to say.
You're on Facebook? Are you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook.
Yep. And
yes,
are you on
yep. Paradise?
Okay. And are you making any book appearances in the near future anywhere in Texas?
I just
or?
Finished speaking at the Historical Writers of America conference in Santa Fe, and I'm waiting for Johnny Depp to call me. And I'll give him my number if he calls after hours.
Okay? He might be on the line right now.
Gee, we didn't even get that number.
All right, Johnny Depp.
Well, Paris, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and joining us for the evening. It's been a real hoot having you.
Oh, Bobby and Jim, thank you truly for being so nice to me.
Well, we're nice to everybody, but especially to you, Paris.
Okay, good night.
Thank you.
You take care of yourself now.
Happy trails. Good night. Keep riding.
Keep riding.
Happy trails.
Hey,
bye-bye.
Stay in touch with us.
Yeah.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. That was Paris Afton Arbonz. What a lady.
That was really fun.
She was fun.
Yeah. Hey, do you know what happens the month of November?
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving.
Besides that, it's National Novel Writing Month.
I did not know that.
And this is so cool, and this has actually been around for a long time, but I had sort of forgotten. So you sign up, and you start writing your book on day one, and you're done at 11:59 on the last day of November, and the goal is to get your book written in 1 month.
Oh, cool.
And there's all kinds of great information. I'm going to put a little something up on the Facebook page.
Very cool.
You see, a 50,000 word novel by 11:59 p.m. November 30th. And that just sounds like a really fun thing. It's been going on for a number of years, but I'll put something up on Writer's Block about it.
Well, next week we have here in the studio with us, not in the studio because she is going to be home, but we have, of course, Russ Avison will be here next week with me as you're getting ready for your final concert down over there in New Hall.
Mm-hmm.
We have as a guest Rochelle Wisoff-Fields. She was a guest earlier. And
She's back. Wonderful.
She's a wonderful lady. She's got a new book out called As One Must, One Can. And it is a continuation of the story that she wrote with her book, Say Kaddish For Me, or Kaddish, I guess it is. And then she's also going to be touting her new coffee table art book, and she's quite the artist.
Yes, she is.
So we're going to have be talking with her about that as well. That is next Thursday here at the Writer's Block at 7 o'clock with Russ and myself. And that's it for us for tonight. We're going to have to go.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. No, I'll see you next Friday night.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. And for Bobby and me and Jim and, of course, the bookie, thank you for listening. We'll be here again next Thursday at 7 o'clock. Be here. And this is a Pacific time. Have fun. And we are out of here.